Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 229. That's right. Tonight's show is brought to you by listening to Kenny and making money. And the that's right part was, I know how to start this podcast. I know what
Good
I'm
job.
Doing. I did it.
Yeah, you did.
And speaking of things that I did this week, I rode my new gravel bike some. I rode that on Friday and Saturday. Got in two different gravel rides, which was pretty cool. Pretty weird to be riding in the last day of February, first day of March.
You want to talk about the weather there? Because it's been bananas here in Salt Lake.
Yeah. I got a tiny bit of a tan line from those two rides. And I was like, oh, that's right. I shouldn't be riding in shorts in a short sleeve jersey in February.
I mean, you were like full on no base layer or anything, like summer kit.
I was summer kit, like full Schlecking it. And for those of you that don't know, the Schleck brothers used to race jerseys unzipped. They were like the king of unzipped. So
drugs.
Yeah. I mean, I was on drugs, but like not the ones they were on. I mean, not actually. But anyways, new bike's cool. It rides like an aluminum bike, which means it's fine.
It holds bike parts and moves forward when you pedal.
It holds bike parts. It moves forward when you pedal. It has a decent seat post or seat tube link. So with the tie post in there, it feels pretty good. Things that have been really good so far are riding the new, what the hell is that tire called? I should know this. The Tracer, the Specialized Tracer tire. I put some of those on there. I paid for them. No one gave them to me. I'm not cool. And the reason I went with that is I was a really, really big geek on the Maxxis Reaver tire. Really think that tire does well. I think that tire is great. And I hopped on bicyclerollingresistance.com because I just wanted to know. And it turns out the Tracer, which retails for about $15 less than the comparable Maxxis tire, that guy is 1 watt faster and more puncture proof. So it has like a 19 watts of drag instead of 20 watts of drag. I don't think that I'm going this nerdy. It's more just like, I'm not like, oh, it's faster. Well, it's barely faster. It's not slower. And it's more puncture proof. So, and they're an independent thing, like kind of like the ultimate friction lab or whatever that does all the chain testing and stuff. And
is it really loop bicycle tire rolling resistance.com?
It's something that I don't want to say stupid, but that, like, in the sense of, like, keep it simple, stupid, it's that simple, stupid.
All right, cool.
Like,
I'm just waiting for people on the show to, like, type in exactly what we're saying, and they're like, what the fuck? This doesn't go anywhere.
If just Google it first, and you'll see how close I was.
Was that a thing, Andrea? Probably was. It was when we were in school, and the internet was becoming popular. And I remember whitehouse.com was, like, a porn site, and whitehouse.gv was the actual website, and you're like doing research, they're like, do not go to whitehouse.com. It's just titties. It's whitehouse.gov. And I'm like, what?
I was not aware of that.
I was. No, I'm really like, because there's some memes where it's like, when you go to White House, like when you're trying to pull up a fact and you quickly type in whitehouse.com instead.
Is or it like, still like that?
It's a meme. It's like not for people.
Well, it was a real thing.
I'm about to find out. 100%
it was a real thing. Let's find out together. Surely they fixed it by now.
No, it's a free election betting site.
Sick.
Do you like that Trump built alligator Alcatraz?
Should the
U.S. give Patriot missile systems to Ukraine?
So anyway, be careful if you're looking for bicycle tire rolling resistance. There's a lot of porn out there.
It's bicyclerollingresistance.com.
So if you want to start a porn site, now
bicyclerollingresistance.com. Got him.
Anyways, don't do that. I feel bad for these folks because they're going to have to make new jigs for all the 32-inch stuff. yeah, and the only reason, again, going back to the I did my homework on it, is I wanted to try these tires, but I didn't want to waste my money. And it turns out they are a tiny bit negligibly faster and more puncture proof than one of my favorite gravel tires. And I put them on my bike, and I've been really happy with them so far. Other cool things to note.
Can I derail you, Matt, or should I wait?
Go for it.
We're just talking about tires, and it's time for me to get new tires. we should let the internet vote on what I put on my bike.
Your Kinevo?
Yep. I need front and rear.
Radials.
Can he send me a picture of your Kinevo and I'll make the first Jerry Instagram post in like 5 years?
Can he?
With a poll.
I have a feeling. It's radial tires. I have a feeling I'm going to get some smart ass responses and I deserve it. But
Aspens.
Yep, I deserve that.
Aspen ST.
Fast track World Cup.
I deserve that. Yeah, they're going to be like fast track rear lines. Aspen front.
I would go. I think the real move would be aggressor rear Aspen ST.
There you go.
It cannot be smaller than 2.5s. I won't do it. Just in general.
Not even like a good 2.4?
No. Fuck that.
Okay. Then we're going to go. Dude, I got it. It is going to be. What is that tire called?
And I am actually asking for semi-serious responses. I'm maybe thinking going off the rails might put some Contis on there. I think I even got a couple Contis in the basement. But they came out with some new ones recently. Because the rep gave me those forever ago.
Well, my Conti rep's given me Conti tires a bunch of times, and then they leave, and I'm like, Jesus fuck, it's all rears.
Yeah, something.
And they weigh
I got
1,300 grams a piece.
I'm not as concerned about weight, luckily. I don't want, like, a moto tire necessarily. I'd rather it not be 1,400 grams, but I'm not that picky on weight.
Four digits isn't out of the question.
Not out of the question. It's got to be pretty close to the start of four digits, though. So 1,000 grams, not off the table. Well, remind me, I'll shoot you a picture.
All okay.
Right. Anyway, so continue.
And then, let's see. So I rode the bike Friday, Saturday. Sunday, I rode the moto. Monday, I went and took care of a bunch of adult stuff in Canyon City, which means I went to the metal recycling place and I bought some steel. And then I went and did some stuff at the clerk's office, like taking care of my... We can get 5-year trailer plates, but you have to do it in person. So I got 5-year plates for my trailer, so I don't have to think about it again until 2031 or whatever 5 years from now is. And I went to the two used car dealerships in the old Canyon City, and car salesmen are dickheads. So yeah. Then I came home and I drove past a Harbor Freight without stopping there. And I think my man card is in fear of like being revoked.
Harbor Freight.
Yeah.
Harbor Freight's better than it's ever been. It's pretty wild. They're doing good.
It's God's gift to DIYers.
They're doing good. They were off my list.
It's like an
20 years ago.
Temu.
They had actual hot garbage 20 years ago, but now their stuff is like really good.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty wild.
Yeah. Also, just in case you're listening, I'm sure there's someone that works at a car dealership that listens. Don't be a fucking asshole.
All right.
Like, just don't be a dick.
It's got to be tough, though, right? Like, you know.
No, man. I'm going to tell you what happened. I drove up and I literally wanted to look around, right? So, park in one of the little customer parking spots in my 1998 Nissan Frontier. Kind of dirty. Not a very nice looking vehicle in today's world.
That does help. You know, if you just pull up in that thing, no offense, I think it's great. And if they come up to you, probably the first thing I'd say after they're like, oh, you're looking for a car, I'd be like, look what I'm driving. Does it look like I have any money? And they'd be like, and they'd leave you alone. And then you can go walk around and look at shit.
No, then they're like, oh, we do in-house financing.
Anyway, sorry. I'm not trying to dig on you or your vehicle.
We do we do 10-year loans on our cars.
Both of my cars are pieces of shit.
I'm going to come back to a story about my truck and an old bicycle that I touched this week. So I just start wandering over to the used cars and I'm like kind of poking around and some dude shuffles out. He shuffled. He didn't really walk. And he's like, hey, yada, 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 yada. And I noticed that he doesn't have sunglasses on, which is kind of weird. And I was like, oh, here. I got sunglasses. And I like walked around him so his back would be to the sun. And he's like, this is my job. I just want to be like, man, I'm a fucking nice human. And I have on sunglasses and a hat. And you're out here bald headed squinting into the sun. But, and also he's probably like 5'6". So he's looking up at me and he's just getting blasted in the face by the sun.
By the way, that's another thing. Why the fuck would people in high altitude places, because like the Utah sun will burn your fucking retinas out. The people that roll around with no sunglasses on is mind blowing.
And that is like a fucking rude awakening. If you've lived in Memphis for most of your life, Where, you know, there's sun, of course. It's hot, there's sun.
It's different.
It's fucking
very different.
It's way different when you're, especially like you get out in the snow. Like the first time Matt and I went out for like kind of a long snow adventure in like just clear, bright sun, we realized like, I don't know, a mile and a half from like the trailhead, it's like, I can't see. Like I literally, if I close my, like things are blurry and if I close my eyes, I'm seeing like fluorescent spots.
It's really, yeah. It's really wild. It's pretty much the same as being in space and looking at the sun.
So anyways, dude isn't like, oh, thanks. You know, he has to be tough guy about it. And then he's like, what brings you in? And I was like, I'm looking for a new truck. And he raises his hands above his head, drops them to his side, slapping his legs and goes, well, you're standing in the used ones.
Wow,
and I
what
pointed
a
at
weirdo.
Mine and I was like, well, mine's from 98, so.
They're all new here.
What a
weirdo. And then after I looked around, he checked in with me as I was leaving. And when I told him what I wanted, he's like, well, no one wants that truck. And I was like, no, I understand that companies produce what's in demand. And the truck that I'm looking for was not in huge demand. So there's going to be fewer examples of it that rolled off the lot new, meaning there will be even less opportunities to buy a decent condition used one. But as I said when we started, I'm not in a rush, and I just wanted to browse around while I was passing through town. Like,
are you allowed to tell us what you're looking for? Is it like an El Camino or something?
No, it's just there wasn't. What I want is an extended cab, 6-foot bed, mid-sized truck.
Gotcha.
And most mid-sized trucks are going to be full four-door with 4.5, 5-foot beds. And I just refuse to have a truck bed that shit does not fit inside of. So, and when I say refuse, like if my neighbor had a 4-door and she was like, my husband passed 5 years ago, I'm finally going to sell his truck. I'll sell it to you for $5,000. I'd be like, you know, and it was well below market value. I'd be like, can I go get cash or will you take a check? Like, you know, but if I'm going to spend the amount of money I'm going to spend, I'm going to get what I want. And that just means that I'm going to have somewhat patience when finding it.
I think you should buy whatever truck you can find and just invite me over. We can make that as long as a bed as you want. If it's a 5-foot and you want it to be a 6-foot, we can do that.
I think I would like it to look a little better.
Does it involve a Sawzall?
You're not invited to help, Andrea.
And will the flux core welder,
you're
the
just,
cheapest Harbor Freight flux
I'm going to unplug
welder,
your goddamn microphone.
Will that work?
Oh,
anything works if you lower your standards enough.
Anyway, just keep that in the back of your mind. If you find that just awesome truck, but it's got the wrong length bed, we can make it the right length bed.
I appreciate the offer, Kenny. I'll keep that in mind.
Excellent.
And then I stopped at the other car dealership, and the dude came out, checked in with me, and the only thing that they had that was somewhat comparable was a supercharged Tacoma, and I'm like, look, man, the last thing that I need in my life is something with a supercharger on it. I was like, when you have more parts, you have more shit to work on. And if it makes more power, I'm going to have more
When
problems.
The hell did they make like, a supercharged Tacoma? Or did someone, like, aftermarket that thing?
He said it was factory. I didn't look enough because I was afraid I would either accidentally buy it or get a raging erection.
So there was that era of Nissans. What, like the late 90s, early 2000s? Didn't they have some supercharged Xterras and stuff?
Yeah, they did.
Okay. That's the only thing that comes to mind about, like, a supercharged truck-ish thing.
A rare dealer installed warrantied options 2005 to 2014.
Oh,
it was a Magnuson built TRD blower that made over 300 horsepower.
Yeah, you don't want that. you don't want to fucking touch that.
No, because all they did was they bolted a Magnuson to the top of it, slammed the hood, and said, "Good luck, little buddy."
Yeah, you want your Toyota to be unreliable? Here you go.
Yeah. So
we've heard these trucks are very reliable, so we fixed it.
Yeah.
They're like it was 2005. They had just sold their millionth Camry and everyone got a kilo of Coke. And they were like, put a supercharger on the Tacoma. We can get to Aspen and get more Coke faster.
But yeah, seriously, think about it. I mean, I love turbos and superchargers and all the things. But if you really think about it, on a Tacoma, like, what the fuck are you doing? You're not going to like all of a sudden you're just going to be like towing 10,000 pound trailers with your supercharged Tacoma. Fuck no, man. Like, what are you doing?
I was going to say,
you're whipping shitties wherever you want.
Going fast. Yeah, dude, this thing.
I don't know, Kenny, what would you do with a supercharged vehicle?
I mean, a 300 horsepower Tacoma, you'd be going like extremely average speeds. It just wouldn't be very impressive, except now it's unreliable.
Yeah. But
like if it's 800 horsepower or something, we can talk. But like a 300 horsepower truck, that's just like what a factory. Well, that's what a factory Nissan Frontier is now.
Yeah, but my truck rolled off the line at 140.
Sure.
So I'm pretty sure this would knock my dick off.
Well, anyway, you did not want that vehicle. So that was a wise choice.
I know. But the difference was, is like that guy just made like small talk because like, you know, their door is by where I was. And then he's like, is this your Frontier? And I was like, yeah. He's like, it looks like, he's like, that's a great looking little truck. And I opened the door and I was like, inside's still pretty clean too. And he's like, man, you've taken good care of this. He's like, well, thanks for stopping in. Maybe we'll see you in the future. And like, I got the two opposite experiences at the two places I dropped into. And with all that said, rode the motorcycle. Or no, I talked about that. The only other thing of note this week is I started building my welding table. So, yeah, when you get little welding splatter on the ground, and then you go to get off the ground and you put one of your hands on the ground and you burn the shit out of yourself, yeah, you'll be really mad. I definitely did that. Someone else should start talking.
Kenny, you go. I have another wildlife story involving cats.
Gotcha. I rode moto. I just keep basically, my game plan is I keep driving down Highway 6 and I get off one exit later. And I say exit, one gravel road later. And then I just go park somewhere over there and I just start riding my motorcycle around. And that's what I've been doing for the past 2 years. And so I've made it to the end of Highway 6.
That's cool because I've been doing kind of the same thing, like just right around Howard. Like I drive to just like a creek drainage that I've never been to and I just park close to it and then I just hike up it.
Yeah, it's super fun. And I've got more to do on Highway 6 for sure, but it's unfortunately summertime stuff because I got to go way up in the old mountains. But I'm doing the lower lying stuff right now. But anyway, I just found a spot and I had a very rough game plan on where I was going to go, but I usually don't take any of that stuff too seriously. I've got my Montana 700 with me, so it's got really good mapping on it. And I just kind of go where the wind blows and that's really it. And I started just kind of riding around, found some cool stuff, found a bunch of old abandoned mines, and I'm going down some like double track.
Oh, quick question.
Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with the Montana 700. I assume that is a motorcycle specific GPS unit.
It's like an everything one. It's like an adventure one. You could use it in a car, I guess. You could totally use it on like a motorcycle. A lot of like ADV motorcycle people are going to run the Montana. You could put side by side, like, I don't know. It's kind of for a little bit of everything. It's really just it's a big screen and you can load whatever maps you want on it for the most part. And it's got the built-in, what you call it, not Spot, but what's the Garmin one?
InReach.
So it's a built-in InReach. Oh, so it's just an all-in-one giant unit.
I mean, it's expensive, but like, that's really cool. Like I've been wanting or kind of just like toying with the idea of having a dedicated GPS because I tend to, if I'm out all day, I run the battery down on my phone.
I like not having my phone out if I can avoid it. I just kind of, of course, can you get amazing apps? I could run like Onyx and all kinds of other stuff on my phone, but then I've also got my phone on my bar and if like I crash, I don't want to break my phone. So I just, I run the Montana.
Kinda, it's kind of like those, I have a buddy, Parker, that like, one time was like, I won't have a phone wallet. He's like, because if I lose my wallet, it sucks. If I lose my phone, that sucks. If I lost my phone and my wallet, that would really suck. You know, it's like if you crash and break your bike, that sucks. But if you broke your bike and your Montana, that sucks. If you broke your bike and your phone, that really sucks because now you're just there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
what I was going to ask is, does that let you, do you log a track while you're out so later you can see how that kind of links up with other stuff and whatnot? Or
yeah, if you look at my Garmin Explore page, I don't think it's public. I could be wrong. I guess I could make it public. I don't really care. People are totally happy to go look at all the crap I've ridden. My goal is to ride everything in Utah, and I'm getting close.
No, you're not.
But I've been a lot of places. It's pretty bananas. And there's so much more to check out. So anyway, I'm going down this kind of double track mining road, and it's looking pretty scarcely used. But I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to keep going down this thing. Let's see where it goes. And I'm looking at the Montana. I'm always kind of checking it to see roughly where stuff goes. Where am I going to go? Can I make a loop out of this? Is this a dead end? Whatever it is. And it looks like it keeps going. So I kept on going. And then I see a little dotted line. And that usually, a little red dotted line on that Garmin. And that usually means a hiking trail. And I'm thinking, but where I see the trail, it's like through, how can I describe it? It's like slick rock type stuff where it's primarily just rock that it goes over. So I'm thinking, hey, I'll just go check this out. If it's a hiking trail, fuck it. I'm going to poach this thing and just go ride it because it's over freaking rocks. Like, and also there's not another human being probably within a mile of me or 10 right. miles of me. Rocks. It's freaking rocks. Anyway,
it's not like a marshland with the no. endangered spotted dick weasel frog or something.
Yes. Yeah. No spotted dick weasels, but I get to the actual, I just see it coming up on my Garmin and I'm like, I'll go check it out and we'll just see what it is. Cause it looks like it loops back to kind of where I started, except it goes all down these rocks for like 10 miles. It looks really cool. And I'm in, this is, doesn't even really seem like a road that anybody has gone down, even in a side by side in forever. And side by sides go everywhere in Utah. So I'm very surprised how ill used this place is. Maybe it's cause weather has moved through and it's like cleaned out all the tracks. I really don't know. But anyway, get to the little trailhead, and I call it a trailhead. It's just a little pole in the ground, but it's that normal brown, flexible plastic.
Carsonite sign.
Oh, what's it called?
Carsonite.
Yeah, there you go. It's one of those signs. And it says Moto. Like, it's just Moto. It's Moto only. Obviously, Moto means you could bike it or hike it, but it was a fucking Moto trail. And I'm like, what in the hell is this thing doing out here? This makes no sense. And I've never heard of this. No one's ever talked about it. It's just hysterical that I go riding in some random ass direction and find some random ass trail. And it's really cool. Single track rock moto trail. It was called something minor tour or something. I don't know. Anyway, something about mines. Regardless, really cool little trail. Definitely technical, but not no huge moves necessarily and no huge exposure. It was just relentless. It was basically like a gooseberry mesa, which I know you've ridden, Matt.
Yeah.
Or like
yeah,
a guacamole. Yeah. It's that kind of stuff.
When you said it was all rock, that's what I was going to ask. Is like, is this like a gooseberry situation where it's just like, just it's literally just rock.
100%.
With the occasional little like decomposed layer of gravel stuck in the rock.
Yeah, or you have like a tiny little sand wash and then you come right back out again and you're back on the rocks. Yep. It's all that stuff. And it was freaking 10 miles just in the middle of nowhere. So I just spent, you know, an hour or an hour and a half because it was probably average 5 miles an hour. It was pretty slow and real techy. It was just fun. So I rode that thing out and then I ended up in more wide open stuff and ended up coming down this mesa. That was a little sketchy because it was really fucking steep and it was washed out. And I started going down it. I'm looking at the Garmin and it definitely looks like it pops out, but it was, and I don't want to exaggerate too much. It was probably a 500 foot drop in like a 500 foot drop in 1,000 feet type thing. Like it was very, very steep. And I went partway down it and I'm like, yeah, don't be an idiot. You have no idea. Cause I couldn't see the trail cause it curves around this, whatever, this wash basically. So I went down a little ways and I'm like, oh, this could be bad. It could be a full drop off here. It could be I have no idea what's down there. And the roads don't look very well traveled. So it didn't seem like no side by sides had ripped up this thing as an example. It was not wide enough for a side by side. And I didn't see a single, I saw like some footprints, but I didn't see any moto tracks. So I'm a little sketched out. I go down, I don't know, 50 feet or so. And I'm like, yeah, this is, don't be stupid because I am in the middle of absolute nowhere. So I do some pivot turns and turn back around and pop back up again, park the bike at the top. And I just walked down the whole thing and it was sketchy, but totally doable. So I just took my time and went down it, popped out at the bottom and did some more exploring down there. I made a huge old loop. I think it was like a 60 miler And it was a long day. I think it was 4 hours, 60 miles. Pretty cool. So fun, really, really fun loop. So just amazing the stuff that you can stumble upon on a gas dirt bike in Utah. Unreal. So that was...
Sounds like I need to buy a plated bike and come visit you.
Yeah. I mean, where I was, you absolutely did not need a plated bike. I was not on any public roads that anybody would have cared about. For sure, I think a plated bike's a wise decision, but this stuff, you would be totally good. I could show you 100 different places where you could never touch a public road on your bike. And yeah, nobody would have cared. This was full OHV stuff for sure. I don't know what the technicality is on some of these gravel roads. Like there were some little bit more main drag gravel roads that I parked on, but absolutely nobody would say anything to you on a normal dirt bike out there.
I know what you mean. It's like that type of road that like you wouldn't get a finger waving unless you saw a cop where the road met the highway and you were pointed towards the highway.
Yeah. And even like, then, like maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
But like for the most part, it's just like once you're in there, you can just go. I get
yeah.
it. Like it might still not be OHV legal, but it's also there's not houses up there that people are going to be mad. You're like ripping past. So yeah, it just doesn't matter.
I think I saw like two other people, period, in that entire zone that I was in. There was one person parked somewhere in their 4Runner and they looked like they were hiking something. And what else did I see? Some other person doing something. No other motorcycles. I think I saw
a guy with the ski mask and a big trash bag.
I saw a side by side in the distance. There was literally nobody out there. It was a Sunday. Just freaking crazy. And it was really cool stuff. Most of the mining road double track stuff was like pretty buff and pretty gnarly. A lot of cool climbing and descending. Even if you just did the double track portion of that ride that I did, it was very entertaining on a motorcycle. Super cool. So anyway, that's what I did.
All right.
Sweet. Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
All right. I don't know what else I've done this week that's interesting.
Went to the range, shot a can at 500 yards.
I did. I went out to the... I hadn't shot my hunting rifle in a while, like my normal, my 270. And so I packed up my stuff and went to the range. And my friend Bill was there. I don't know. I think I've talked about Bill before. He's an older gentleman. Very, very nice. And very, very helpful. And for anyone, I mean, especially guys get shitted on for mansplaining, which they very often do. The first time that I met Bill, I had my dad's old 270 with a really awful, not awful, like a worn out scope, an old rifle. And it was beating the shit out of me with recoil and the scope wasn't really tracking well. So I was having a really hard time sighting it in. And he just very nicely... just kind of like edged his way over and was like, would you like a little bit of help? And I could have said no, and he would have just left me alone and not talked to me at all. And he helped me out a little bit, just, you know, helped me however he could, given the stuff that I had. And, you know, just was really nice about it. And since then, you know, getting a really nice new rifle and optics and everything, you know, he's helped me a ton out at the range because he's there all the time. I think he's there pretty much every day at some point during the day because he's retired and he doesn't talk about it, but dude was a sniper instructor and
he has distance shooting records that still stand to this day, like after 40 years.
Yeah. So like he's qualified. He won't tell you. Someone else has to tell you that stuff. And if you ask him about it, he just downplays it. Like he's like, oh, you know, I was back then, whatever. Yeah. I've done some stuff. And
nobody wants to hear about that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like, just a very humble but extraordinarily experienced person who is willing to help you if you want help and not if you don't. So, yeah, like, Bill was out there and he... the nice thing about Bill... So, like, when you go to a shooting range, especially, like, a rifle range, like, you pull up and if people are there, like, you kind of have to wait until everyone is at kind of a stopping point. And then you're like, yeah, can I go... put a target up or like paint the steel targets out there, you know, because they get a bunch of little bullet marks on them and you can't really tell if you've hit it or where you've hit it or anything. So like, can I go paint targets? And, you know, it might take a few minutes, you know, 10, 15 minutes before everyone's like, all right, yeah, let's all stop shooting, put the signs up to not shoot. And, you know, we just take a break. Well, Bill rolls up and, you know, after like a minute, he's like, can we get a ceasefire? Can we just get a ceasefire real quick? I mean, he's got like that seniority, you know, like no one argues with him about it. Everyone just unloads and puts their guns up and you just stop shooting when Bill gets there. Well, he gets there and he does that and he goes out and paints targets and he comes back and everyone starts shooting again. And a few minutes later, I'm looking at the targets around like 500 yards and I notice there's this target I'm going to shoot, like there's these aluminum cans that are painted fluorescent orange. And he put those out there next to this target at 500 yards. And he's on the bench next to me. And I say, Bill, are those your cans that are fluorescent orange out there? Because I didn't remember seeing them before. He's like, yeah, you want one? I was like, oh, I don't know. I've been, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I don't need to crush my ego right now. And he's like, all right, well, I'll leave one for you if you want it. And a few minutes later, I looked through my scope and there's still one can out there. Like he'd just blown all the rest of them up at whatever places he put them. And I was like, all right, Bill, I was like, give me a spot. I'm going to try to shoot that can.
All right.
He's like, okay, whenever you're ready. Orange can at 500 yards, right? Because he always, like if he's spotting you, he calls it out every single time. And I shoot and I miss. And he's like, you were about 2 or 3 cans to the left of it. Just keep your elevation the same. Just adjust your windage. I do that. Shoot again. And I'm testing out also. Like I was shooting off a bipod for the first time in a long time. And the bipod has just enough wiggle to it. I can't spot my shots. And so I shot. And before I can like get my scope back on the spot where I was shooting, he's like, I hope you saw that. Said, I didn't see it. And then I looked and I was like, but I see that there's a can peeled open about 3 feet to the right. He's like, you got it. You hit it center mass. Like, hell yeah, man. So yeah, killed an aluminum can, just a soda can, at 500 yards.
That's pretty dope.
Cool. Yeah. And I haven't done anything else really interesting until this afternoon. I was just doing something in the house. I don't even remember what I was doing. And I hear the chickens just absolutely losing their fucking minds. Like enough that the dogs inside the house are like getting upset about it. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Because it's in the afternoon and usually in the afternoon they're pretty quiet. And I step out on the porch and I look over there and there's a fucking bobcat putting its face in between like the last pole of the electric fence and the chicken coop. And right when I see it, it like jerks back like it got shocked by the electric fence, like on its face. Most animals will just run off. Well, this one, like it backed up and kind of like repositioned and then crouched down like it was about to jump the fence. And the thing about cats and a lot of predators, but cats especially because they're very vision based predators. When they like if they jump into a chicken yard, they will kill everything that is moving. They won't just grab one and run away. Like, as long as there's something running from them and moving, they will instinctively just grab it and kill it. That's how they're evolved. Like, that's just how they operate. And so, like, it was about to jump in the chicken yard and kill as many chickens as it could possibly see. And, you know, I run, go back in the house and start, like, shuffling, like, trying to keep the dogs in and, like, grab a rifle. And, like, I went back out, and when I slammed the door, it kind of, like, jumped and saw me and, like, ran a few steps behind the chicken coop and stopped right in front of the compost bin. And a compost bin is a very good thing to shoot a small caliber rifle at. And I had my AR-15 with the .223, which is what I use for mountain lion hunting, but, yeah, I mean, it's appropriate for bobcats as well, maybe a little bit overkill, but it's just what was there. And I basically just propped it up on the porch fence and just shot it because it was just like, if I hadn't gone out there and seen it and killed it, like it either was going to jump the fence and killed the chickens then, or it very, very likely would have come back and killed the chickens later tonight. So like, that was just like really intense there for a few minutes. I did bobcat season, like hunting season, actually ended at the end of February. So I decided I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to call the game warden and called him and told him. And he answered, the chickens were still like losing their minds. And he's like, hey, Andrea. Like, I was like, Jacob, I just had to shoot a bobcat that's about to kill my chickens. And like, he's like, I hear that. Can I give you a call back in just a minute? He called me back and I told him, and he's like, okay. He's like, you know, if you want to keep the meat, you can, but you know, I have to take the pelt because it's out of season. And yeah, and like a bobcat pelt, you could sell it for $100, $200. So yeah, like I was like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, kind of disappointing, but that's okay. Like, I'm just glad that, you know, I didn't end up with like a flock of dead chickens. But yeah, so in skinning it and processing it though, it was full of worms, which was really gross. And I sent him a picture of one. He's like, I don't think you should eat that. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to. But that was wild. Like, it's really weird, and this is probably more than what a lot of our listeners care about, but I'm going to say it anyway. Over the last few years, like, I mean, I've been hunting out here in Colorado since 2017 or 18.
Something like that.
The past 2 years, the number of animals that have had parasites and the volume of parasites in those animals. And yeah, they're wild animals. They get that stuff. You know, like, it happens. Like, you aren't going to, very rarely will you kill an animal and it doesn't have like a few fleas on it or something. But like, I'm talking like rabbits where like their whole skin is moving because there are so many fleas in the middle of winter. You know, like, that's something that they should have fewer of in the wintertime. Yeah, just tons and tons of parasites the last couple of years, and we've just had these really warm winters. And it's just, I'm not really excited to see what happens. You know, people are like, oh, you know, the animals are thriving because there's more food available in the wintertime. It's like, well, yeah, there's also like the animals are being food for parasites now in the wintertime because parasites aren't dying in the wintertime, or fewer of them are dying in the wintertime. So that was unsettling as a whole, but I'm just glad that I'm glad I didn't lose an entire flock of chickens today. So I'll consider it a win. But that's been my week. That's all the exciting shit that I've done that I can remember. You want to do new shit?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm talking, so I'm going to go first with this article that I thought was really fucking interesting. The headline is, apparently Gates Belt Drive may owe Spot bikes millions in unpaid royalties.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so back in the day when Gates Corporation, which is, they make belts for a lot of applications. It is, like, bikes is a very, very tiny fraction of what they make a belt for. But when they said, we're going to make a belt for bikes, Spot developed a way that you can design a frame so that you can put a belt through the chainstay of the bike. And they said, sure, Gates, you can sell this to other frame manufacturers, but we get royalties. I said, yeah, that's cool. Well, Spot has not gotten any royalties from that since 2008. And so now they are wrapped up in lawsuits, and Gates is countersuing. And right now, according to this article, it kind of looks like Spot is the one that judges are favoring, but it looks like they're going to their... Let me see if I can find the latest update. So in Colorado, a judge decided back on February 17th, they denied Gates' countersue attempt. And yeah, so it looks like they have just more legal shit to get through before someone actually makes a decision that Spot, or that Gates, needs to pay Spot their royalties.
The more you fuck around, the more you find out.
Yep.
Well, if Spot wins, what do you think they're going to do with their... with their new earnings? Go to the club?
Probably give it to whoever they owe money to.
Jesus.
I mean, I'm just assuming that any small frame manufacturer, large one for that matter, probably has some debt they need to pay.
You mean the people that run Facebook ads, same performance, less known, might be looking for money?
I mean, I think every bike manufacturer is looking for money. And, you know, I have nothing against Spot. I love their bikes. I, you know, still have my rocker. I really liked the Mayhem, but just because I knew I wasn't going to ride for a while and I might want something different when I do start riding more again, like, you know, like...
I think you're really going to like the...
A couple of times in the last month or two that I had an analog full suspension bike to ride.
The new bike is so ugly.
Yeah, I'm not really big on that color. But hey, at least they're doing colors now, not just either black and red or red and black. I think that the purple rocker is fucking hot. And if I ever won the lottery, I wouldn't say anything, but there'd be signs. I would have a purple rocker.
Riding a purple rocker with a Gunworks bike gun on your back.
Oh my God. Look, I don't know if you guys, Kenny, have you ever seen like the...
No one, no, let's keep moving.
No, there's this lady that does, I think, I don't know, it's a lady, I forgot the name of her YouTube account, but she does these shorts that's like rich people shit us poors haven't heard about. And she talks about like ridiculous rich people shit, like $10,000 rolls of toilet paper. I found the, I found the firearms manufacturer equivalent of that, and it's gun.
That's how you have to mount the fucking bottle on that thing.
It's Gunworks is this company that does these really high end precision custom rifles, and they're fucking ridiculous. I mean, they're nice, but they're fucking ridiculous too. All right, you guys can go. My voice is getting tired.
How about the Atherton 3D printed tie cranks?
It looks pretty hot.
They look really good. They look very classy. I'm usually not into somebody else making yet another crank set, but these seem pretty freaking hot. The one thing I have not seen is the price. Here we go. Pricing. Yeah.
They don't have that like weird ridged 3D printed look. Like you don't look at this and you're like, that's a 3D printed piece of junk.
Yeah. It actually looks nice and it's finished properly. You can run a dub spindle, you can run a 30 mil spindle, you can get it in a zillion different lengths, you can get it in every chain line you want, you can get it in three different finishes. I don't know.
11 arm lengths available.
It seems pretty awesome. I hope they make some e-bike ones. I don't really need them, but that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that looks good.
So anyway, I like them. They're $900. Not cheap, but I think it's less than the E-wings were, right?
Yeah, definitely less than the 5D.
Hmm. Pretty cool. I like most of the Atherton stuff.
They just do a really good job with... I haven't seen any... Like, I mean, most of their stuff, I'm like, I would never use that. I have no need for that, but I really like it.
I mean, just look at that freaking bike that it's on. I don't know. There's something about it. It looks so...
The lugged carbon.
God. I'm not about, like, gluing stuff together if you don't have to, but that bike is fucking hot.
It is hot.
All right. That was one of the things on my list.
Oh, sorry.
The Noble wheels.
Noble, or while you, I don't have those pulled. You
all
just
right.
Go.
So last week we talked about the Bird wheels that were the lightest 30 mil internal cross country wheel sets in the world.
And then you know what Sub said? Birdman's dead. I'm lighter in any weather.
Oh my God. No one's going to get that.
Yeah, I forgot that. Clayton, I forgot that lyric. Jeez.
So now Noble.
Wait, did you get it?
That lyric is very familiar. Like, I've heard that lyric.
I think it's Birdman's dead, I fly in any weather. Gator boots and a pimped out Gucci suit.
That's exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so Noble now has the lightest 30 mil internal cross-country wheel set in the world. It has a Noble rim, which I don't offhand see the weight of just the rim. I don't know.
Is this one the lightest because they weighed it without end caps and without without other very important wheel parts?
I don't know.
There's no end caps, and the center sleeve between the bearings is missing.
This one uses Bird spokes and DT Swiss 180 hubs. It is 28-hole front and rear, and the wheel set is 993 grams. They're $2,500 for the wheel set. So we've now got three different sub-1,000-gram cross-country wheel sets, two of which are 30 mil internal.
I will say...
Am I doing that addition correctly?
$2,500? That's, like, not that crazy for that, to be honest.
What are the Specialized World Cup wheels? Like, what are...
I think they're
about
$2,500. But maybe they're more than that, actually, the carbon spoke ones. I'm thinking the old Control SLs were... I think 2,500-ish.
Yeah, Kenny, you're way off. These are 3,300.
What?
The controls.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. So what I'm getting at is $2,500 for these is
What were the
pretty reasonable.
What was the cost on the Bird wheels?
$2,500.
Okay. About the same.
About the same.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see because it's not that I don't think I would want like the absolute lightest like sub 1,000-gram wheels, but the trickle down of that
$2,400 wheels.
Yeah, for the birds. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so like kind of the trickle down of like now other wheel sets that aren't, you know, made to be sub 1,000 gram, like your 1,200 gram wheel sets. Like
that's the problem. They're not happening.
It's just making the jump straight to sub 1,000.
It's like that's something that I'm kind of disappointed in is with the development of the World Cup wheel, the lightest, well, fuck, their website's being a... Kenny, do you know what the... I'll just do my own clicking.
What's the question?
Like, what's the next heaviest weight Roval wheel?
I mean, it'd be the Control, it'd be the Control SL. Like, they still make the Control SL, and it should be like 1,200-ish, maybe 1,250.
That's with Industry 9 hubs, which
I do like Industry 9 hubs. So, like, that would
1,275, and those retail for...
They should be 2,500.
2,900.
Oh.
No, those are... Those are
2,900.
1,299. So 13 plus 16 is 29. So 2,599.
That's a lot of dollars for that.
Mm-hmm. And then the Control SL with 350s, I don't know what they're doing different. I don't think there's a 200 gram difference in those hubs, but those are 1,478.
That's what I have. Those are Enduro rated.
No, they're not, Kenny. They're Kenny Enduro rated.
Yeah, I'm pretty light-footed. Those are great hubs. Right. They'll even work with one spring.
Let's see. We never talked about the new Maven brakes.
Oh, yeah. It was the lever that's different now, right? Well, the whole brake is new, or you can get a lever upgrade for your old Mavens, like a rebuild-type upgrade.
Well, they changed the lever, and they changed the caliper.
Right.
The lever is backwards compatible with your old caliper. The old stuff will not be made. Like, this is new. It's the old stuff's not going to... This is like a running change, as anyone should know, in the SRAM lineup. A1, A2, that would be like a color change. A1, B1, that would be, okay, the letter changed. We're on a totally different revision now. And they made the pistons a little smaller. And they made the lever feel better.
Have they done...
But they do have...
They've got a couple of Cs in their lineup, don't they?
Yeah, like the C1 reverb was the third gen of the hydro internal reverb.
Yeah, they were up to like F on the old reverbs, and they still didn't figure it out until they made it wireless.
And then, yeah, you know, like with SRAM Force, we had Axis and then D1 and then E1. So
yeah, that's true.
But they,
that's true.
They do have a backwards compatible tuning kit for your...
I mean, they do. It's all backwards compatible, so
yeah.
I haven't touched them yet. So
this is a fun one. I don't know why I'm feeling a little feisty. What do you think is the worst SRAM product that has been made? Like, it can be a family of products or a singular product, or you can withdraw yourself from the discussion if you would like. But I don't recommend
I think that original reverb wasn't that great. It was like a stands wheel. It was like kind of the option at the time, unless you wanted like a post in the whole gravity driver.
All right, so Andrea's going. Andrea's going. What's your vote, Andrea?
I mean, I'd say that, like, you know, like reverbs. Once people started figuring out how to make a not hydraulic dropper post, and like started doing well with it. Like, I think reverbs could have gone away and no one would have really cared.
So your vote is reverb?
Yeah.
Okay. Matt?
Well, my clarifying question was going to be at launch or through support?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would let you have two responses if you do want to cover if they're going to be different. Like, as in, they made such a huge failure on the launch, but then totally fixed it and everybody loved it. Or you can do just a family of products or single product that was just terrible.
Well, the thing I want to say on support is SRAM really dropped the ball on 11-speed ETAP. Like, road support just disappeared for that.
That's true. They just
quit making parts.
Yeah, that's accurate.
So I would say that that part was a good product. It really, the wireless is what kind of took it away from Shimano.
They really used the consumer as beta testers for that product, is what I feel like, on the first gen ETAP, because it was not backwards compatible, other than what, the battery?
No, I'm talking not Axis. I'm talking about 11-speed ETAP.
ETAP, that's what I was saying. Yeah, ETAP, the road stuff, that they stopped making stuff for it. Like if you wanted a front derailleur, we sold a front derailleur we had on the shelf. It was like we sold it for $1,000 or something because they did not exist.
Right. And that's what I think they really screwed up on is here's a Halo product that like if you came in with a 10-speed red mechanical bike and you crashed out your front derailleur, I can still find an like Apex or Rival derailleur and keep the bike rolling.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just abandoned that product. So that kind of hurts my feelings.
That's a good one. I like that response. That's a good one. Because we have had quite a few customers that had those really nice bikes and they were they were 4 or 5 years old, not exactly incredibly old.
Right. It's not like, but I mean, a 10-speed red bike, that bike could be from 2007.
Yeah, that could be easily
that bike
10
could be
or 15
years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that, and I understand that the 10-speed stuff is still used in affordable locations and yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, affordable locations meaning like in a lineup of bikes sold today, a few years ago, you could have still got like a bomb track with 10-speed on it because they wanted a nice-ish, you know, let's call it all good brands but lower tier stuff, yada yada. I get it. I don't need an email anyone. But I would say that's the one that they really bungled the worst on support. And then a family of products, I would just say one that I've never understood is Truvative. And I'm going to say that in two ways. I'm trying to make sure I get this right. You could have had a Truvative carbon crank. You could have had a GX carbon crank, or you could have had a descendant carbon crank, and they were like the same fucking crank. And I've never understood where Truvative lives inside of the SRAM family. It just like Zip makes components for your bar stem seat post. Why don't we just have Zip bars and stems for mountain? And we do have Zip mountain wheels now, so shouldn't we have Zip mountain bars?
I think Zip just had Truvative had a mountain vibe and Zip had a road vibe. And I think they were scared about crossing the streams, but they should have just embraced it. And yeah, they should have just picked a lane. I totally agree. I never understood the Truvative thing either. I'd love to know the history on Truvative because I just don't know it well enough. Did they buy that name from some other company or is that something that they just had all along and they started pushing it a lot harder in like the 2010s. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But no, that's another good one.
I'm definitely going to stick with Reverb because I feel like once other companies were making really solid, like reliable, easily serviceable dropper posts, that like there's just no fucking point to having a Reverb. Like now there kind of is because like they make it wireless and a wireless seat post is fucking cool. Like a wireless dropper post is really cool. But I think they could have just, like, once other companies were making really, really Once other companies were making great, like, mechanical dropper posts, I think they could have just shelved the Reverb for, like, 5 or 6 years and then brought it back out wireless and, like, people would have probably bought more of them.
It was also...
without that bad taste of, like, the middle of the road Reverbs like for all that time.
It was also a double whammy because not only was the post itself internally terrible, but it had the hydraulic actuator that they just stuck with. And it was so, it was just so bad, so bad. Yeah. God, I've bled so many of those things. It's unreal. I also have a drawer full of every iteration of rebuild kit for Reverbs. They made 37 rebuild kits for those damn things. Oh, you got a D2 Stealth? Oh, that's a different rebuild kit. Oh, it's a 100 mil travel? Oh, that's a whole nother kit. Jesus, it was so bad.
So, Kenny, what's your vote?
Oh, hold on. We need to go back to Truvative real quick.
Go for it.
So, Truvative was founded by a gentleman named Mickey. I'm going to go K-O-Z-U-S-C-H-E-K.
Kozuchek, maybe?
Mickey K. sold Truvative to SRAM in 2004. And in 2007, he launched Lazine along with Dylan Clapp and the former Truvative marketing chief. Or no, Dylan Clapp, the former Truvative marketing chief, and Lenny Wang. So,
but do you remember Truvative at all before SRAM owned them? Because I can't remember any Truvative products personally. And I was involved in this mountain biking thing since like 95. So that dates
me. I started in like 2009.
And I just don't remember Truvative until SRAM owned them. It's kind of weird.
Well, I wasn't around to know.
So then it just makes you wonder, like, why did SRAM buy him? What did they get from him? And why? It's just what a weird thing. There's got to be more backstory. I'd love somebody who would candidly talk about why they did what they did and if it was overall a success or a failure. Like, would they do it again type thing? Because who knows? Maybe they did it because they were trying to get that group of engineers. Or
didn't they do the Hammerschmidt in Truvative?
Yeah. You think that was do you think that was Truvative days? Is that was their main thing was Hammerschmidt? Because SRAM continued with Hammerschmidt for a minute. Like, you could buy Hammerschmidt from SRAM, I thought, for a little while. And for those that don't know, Hammerschmidt is the 2 or 3 speed like DH specific gearbox thing. It was basically a replacement for a front derailleur for a DH bike. And it was this big old thing. Some people liked it. I'm sure when it worked okay.
I'm trying to find some of Truvative's original components. It sounds like...
I feel like a Hammerschmidt on your Eagle drivetrain would be pretty fucking cool.
1000%.
Cries in Freehub Pulse. No, what would be really cool would be a Hammerschmidt on an XX1 11 speed bike.
Oh, yeah, that would be really good. That would be, well, it wouldn't be light. Like, you would defeat the purpose of XX1 11 speed.
What you do is you do a Hammerschmidt single speed.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people actually did that. Like, when I was first getting into single speed stuff, I saw people talking about that and didn't really understand what they were talking about until, like, much later.
The old 2x1.
Like, I think I remember internet arguments about, is it still a single speed if you have a Hammerschmidt?
I'm going to say that 2 gears is not 1. I can do specialized math.
I'm still looking for this.
Well, you keep looking. I want to hear Kenny's input.
This is difficult because... Oof.
I figured when you ask that, you had one. Like,
I really didn't. I really didn't. I wanted to hear your responses more than mine. I have such a hard time choosing between the two obvious ones, which are reverb and guide. Which one has caused me more pain, more direct pain, like more direct physical and mental pain, is probably guide. But something about the reverb just never sat right.
And guide,
guide
will still do it too, because like someone will come in with like a bike from... I don't know, 2014, and be like, my brakes feel weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But my brakes were good. And then they sat in the sun and now they're broken. It's like, yeah, you can't go outside with those brakes.
I live in Minnesota and I just came to Colorado and now my brakes are locked up because there's sun.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good. They're not outside brakes. They're indoor brakes.
They work well on your trainer.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, because that's such a hard decision, I'm actually trying to intentionally come up with a third one that's out of left field. Because Matt had some good ones. I was pretty impressed with those responses.
Thank you.
What? Which ones?
Like even the SRAM wheels, which that aren't very popular, but like I've got a set of the 27.5 plus wheels, and I can't really complain about them. Like I like the free hub better than a Chris King free hub.
They were pretty bad. Like, they had some very modern wheels that were non-tubeless compatible.
Oh, yeah. Like, that doesn't count.
They were pretty bad.
It does count because they launched wheels. Like, tubeless was becoming a thing, and they launched SRAM carbon wheels that weren't tubeless ready.
Yeah. What the fuck are you guys doing over there? So that's up on my list, but that one... It was just so bad, nobody really bought them. But they definitely tried to sell them to you. There's got to be something
Luckily,
that I'm missing.
At the time, there were wheels that were just so much better at that time that like no one really...
Everybody just sold stands at that time. Yeah. The stands on 3.3 hubs was just impossible to beat.
Oh, I sold a set of Sands wheels yesterday for $125.
Jeez, those were the good old days, though. Good old, like a Stands arch on a 3.3... Boy, was it skinny, but those were great wheels.
Man, after we're done with this, I have one more new shit before we go to our one listener question.
But it was great. They made every end cap for every situation ever. They were reasonably priced. The rims were fairly durable, unless you got like, you know, crests and you knew what you were getting, or if you got race golds. But like arches and flows were so just good. It's just such a shame that they went downhill from there. But anyway, back to SRAM. Like, I'm having a really hard time with this. I've not been able to come up with an awesome left field answer. So I'm going to say guides. It's very obvious, right, but that's my answer.
All right. My last new shit. The Dragon, which is Dragan, pocket winch, sold as a trail building tool. It's a winch that can fit in your hydration pack, has its own little carrying case, and like a segmented handle that you screw into it. And it weighs a little under a pound. And it can, in single line mode, can pull 1,000 pounds. Or if you use their little mini snatch block, it has a 2,000 pound pulling.
She said snatch.
Has a 2,000 pound pulling capacity. I think it's fucking cool. And they say, like, yeah, if you, like, if there's a tree you need to move off the trail or something. Like, I feel like this would be pretty handy for, like, moto people also. But, like, yeah, there's a tree on the trail and you don't have a fucking chainsaw with you and it's too big for a silky saw. Like,
how much does it cost?
It's expensive. It's $400.
I know what I want for Christmas.
Like, I want one of these. So here's the thing. Like, I don't know if I want an extra 1 pound in my hunting pack, but I can say that, like, the time that I had an elk 5 miles from the trailhead and Matt had to, like, it was mandatory for him to come and, like, help me because I couldn't physically lift a 60-pound elk quarter off the ground to, like, hoist it into a, like, up to a, in a tree. Like, this would have done that. And that's fucking awesome. Like, the application for this goes well beyond just moving a log out of the trail. Like, that's really cool.
Do we want to talk about the Chinese wireless group set?
Oh, I missed that one.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely, I'll let you juggle it real quick.
What's the brand name?
Chinese, I think, is the brand name. Let's see.
Is it Sword?
Wheeltop.
Oh, I've heard about Wheeltop.
And they look exactly like SRAM parts. It is ridiculous. They didn't even try to make them not look like SRAM parts.
I mean, that's definitely a rotor crank, not a SRAM crank.
I guess I don't see the crank yet. They also...
I think that derailleur looks very Shimano-ish. Well, it has a little cover on the battery like a SRAM.
It looks like a GX to me, like a GX axis.
I haven't looked at that enough.
It reminds me of Gen 1 Force, but the calipers are giving me big Hope vibes.
See, I think those calipers are giving... Like, that flat mount caliper looks like... Oh, that's, you're looking at the Road Group, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that, I think those calipers look like Shimano calipers because they have the little thin pads and shit.
Now I'm looking at the road, the mountain bike stuff. Yeah, that is 100% just GX from Wish.
Yep, it is the Wish.com. Anyway, funny.
Wait, 3 to 14 speed drivetrains? How?
There's probably a lot to unpack here, but yeah.
Dude, you know it's good. Tell me what's wrong with this photo, Andrea.
The tiny ass cassette
on the Wheeltop site. You scroll below the group and the person on the bike is drive side out.
I was gonna say that brake rotor is on the drive side.
The
is it,
flip
is it, yeah. AI generated?
No, the image has been flipped left to right.
So I've got a question for the world. So I'm old. Why do people flip images? What's the fucking what's the point?
So I will tell you why this image is probably flipped. Because if this is an Asian brand, my understanding is that in Asia, they read from the right to the left. So a bicycle moving to the left looks better. And the person that put this together didn't know enough to know to find a different image. They just flipped this one.
Sure. I mean, that's fine. I'm talking about just... I don't know. You see some short or something. Why do people flip? Why do people flip their cameras? They're like, you know, wearing stuff, you know, their whatever the logo is on their hat or their shirt or whatever. And of course, the shit is backwards now. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Can we do our one listener question?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, they sell brakes. Holy shit.
I don't like that. Let's keep moving.
Okay.
So we have a question from Ross. Ross says, hey guys, love the podcast, long time listener. Looking for some advice, we are planning a mountain bike trip to Colorado for a week around Labor Day weekend. There'll be three of us, all experienced, intermediate to advanced cross-country riders who have ridden many 50-mile races. We've also ridden the whole enchilada in Moab without issue. Looking at a couple of big high alpine rides, but we are flatlanders from North Dakota. We'd be riding 3 days and then being joined by our wives, who are beginner and novice riders, for 2 additional days. Looking at Crested Butte, Salida, Breckenridge, or Fruta Grand Junction areas, leaning towards Crested Butte. Any advice on which area would be best for this type of trip, and any must-do trails? We are also considering a guided ride out of Crested Butte for the first day of the trip. Do you think this would be worth it? Also, I'll be bringing my Yeti ASR cross-country bike while the other two are on a Stumpy and a Ripmo. Will the ASR be enough bike, or would I be better off renting? Not planning on hitting any big features, but don't want to be terribly underbiked. Thanks in advance. Love the show. You know, if you've all done whole enchilada, is pretty, it's a big, pretty rowdy day. And if you all got through that and you weren't, I mean, I'm sure you puckered a little bit in several spots and you probably walked some stuff. You know, if you had fun doing that, pretty much if you just go to whatever your favorite trail app is, you're not really going to find stuff in probably any of those places. I'm not super familiar with Breckenridge and Grand Junction. Like, I don't know if there's like one trail in either of those spots where you'd be like, nah, don't fucking take a cross-country bike there. I think you're going to be all right in any of those places. Labor Day weekend, it's going to be pretty busy wherever you go, and you know that. And yeah, I mean, the weather can be a little bit spotty.
Will the crest
There's
be open?
A Probably, yeah.
That was a joke.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's always a chance that there might be like a snowstorm that comes through Colorado and snows on the high alpine stuff. But, you know, the likelihood is better for that on Labor Day weekend than it is in July. But it's generally pretty nice. And I think you're going to, I don't know, I think you'll be happy with any of the like suggested routes and like popular stuff that you find on any mountain bike app for those areas. I mean, I've ridden everything around Salida, including, I don't know, the gnarliest alpine trail, I guess, would be like Greens Creek or Little Browns Creek or something. Like, any of those, I've ridden those on a cross-country bike. And, yeah, I mean, is it more fun on a bigger bike? A little bit. You can go a little faster. But, yeah, I mean, if you're experienced on that bike, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I would say one of the rides that I did on both the Stumpy Evo and the Epic Evo, and I mean, you have to understand, I knew these descents and I was riding like I was not on vacation, but I was 30 minutes faster to the top on the Epic Evo. And this is the old one that was only like, what, 115 in the rear. So 30 minutes faster to the top, 3 minutes slower on the descent. So, I mean, I think riding the ASR, one, is a nice bike. Two, you already know it. And three, I have a feeling you're not going to be, you already said you're not out to huck your meat, so don't rent a heavier bike to lug around all the day. Like, none of this shit for the big alpine rides, I'm going to go ahead and say it, like, you have to seek out the actual gnarly shit. Like, if you rode in Salida and you rode the crest, like the classic crest, that bike is totally fine. If you're like, I want to go smash down Greens Creek, yeah, you'd be pissed off, right?
Like, the first time I ever rode Greens Creek, I was on my cross-country bike, and it fucking stormed and rained the whole way down. So it was just slick and sketchy as hell.
Didn't die.
And I didn't die. And actually, I had a pretty fucking good time. Like, it was scary and puckery, but, like, it was a proper, hard, just good ride. So, yeah, I think you're going to be fine, even if you ride the stuff that says, like, you know, whatever, expert level. You know, if you want specifics for around Salida, you can email us and we can give you, like, more detailed stuff. But all of those places have options from beginner to pretty rowdy. So, I think you're going to be good. As far as doing a guided ride, I mean, I'm not going to tell you not to, but if you're comfortable with navigating with, you know, some kind of an app, maybe you have one you can use offline, like if you don't have phone service, I don't know if I'd spend the money on that. But, you know, if you just want to do it, just to, I don't know, do a guided ride and not have to think about that stuff, then do it.
Yeah, and if let one person win, meaning if one person really wants a guide, like one person out of the five, it sounds like, are going to be there, right? Six. No, I'm adding up the wrong people. I was thinking
three of us and then their wives. So
five people, six people, whatever. If one person wants a guide, get a guide.
Yeah.
Because they might not want a guide for true reasons other than comfort. Hey, I've never ridden out here before. You know, I'm just from North Dakota. I'm a Flatlander, yada, yada. I really want a guide for the first ride out. Do it. Set their week off on the right foot. Just do it.
And just advice for anyone who's going to be coming to Colorado from lower elevation, know the symptoms of like altitude sickness, because that can be anything from just like feeling shitty to actual like life-threatening conditions. So that's always just a good thing to know. Drink plenty of water, but also lots of electrolytes. Don't just drink plain water because you will just pee it straight out. Lots of electrolytes. Figure out whatever drink mix for electrolytes works for you and stick with it and drink it on and off the bike. Like, just...
And start the week before you get here.
Yeah, just stay really hydrated and just kind of know like early symptoms of any problems with altitude, because that, you know, if there are six of you, someone is probably, out of the six of you, someone's probably going to have a little bit of a bad time. But just knowing that ahead of time and having a plan, like, oh yeah, if we're in Crested Butte and someone starts to feel bad, we can go to Gunnison, which is a little lower elevation. Or we can go to, you know, if we're in Salida and we go, you know, up to the crest and someone starts coughing up a bunch of mucus or something, maybe that night we should drive down to Canyon City and like get a hotel room, because Canyon City is lower elevation. So yeah, just kind of pick those spots out in case someone in your group is, you know, having a bad time with elevation. And Grand Junction and Fruta are definitely a lower elevation spot. So yeah, like if someone's consistently having problems with elevation, go to Grand Junction. Yeah,
those must be crazy low. You think they're about 5,000, like at the base? Heck, could be lower than that.
Like five and six, I think, something like that.
If only we were sitting at a computer, they could tell us Grand Junction was 4,583.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just going by pure memory of driving there, and I'm like, I don't remember going up or down many hills, so it's probably about the same as where I'm at.
And Breckenridge, I think I don't remember the exact elevation of Crested Butte, but I think of all of those, Breckenridge is going to be like the highest starting point of elevation.
Breck is at 96.
Yeah.
And Crested Butte is 88. So Fruta is lower than Grand Junction, which is lower than Salida, which is lower than Crested Butte, which is lower than Breckenridge.
And Salida has town trails and that are amazing. So, you know, that's also like a slightly lower elevation option. Canyon City?
7,200.
Yeah, like if you know, someone gets full on elevation.
Sending somebody to Canyon City in September is rude.
I mean,
it's so fucking hot there,
but it's a dry heat.
It doesn't matter if it's a dry heat if your skin melts off and is laying on the pavement.
It's not going to be that hot. Yeah, I mean, look, you have
you
options.
You melted the other day when it was 60 degrees. Don't tell me that 100's not going to be hot.
Well, relative to someone who, I don't know, lives at low elevation.
I don't know. 100 degrees in the desert is like chill.
Dude, Canyon City is all pavement and sadness, and it is the hottest place I've ever been.
Yeah, Canyon City's not, like, out of all, like, where you can go to ride mountain bikes in Colorado, Canyon City is definitely, like, the least aesthetic. But it also, like, if someone in your group is having just major problems, like, we got to go to urgent care or something, like, just go to Canyon City and you can ride some, you know, there's decent trails in Canyon City. They're nice. You know, go ride there.
I just had to pick a place. So I picked Crosby, North Dakota, and the average high in September is 70 degrees. So yeah, it's going to be really fucking hot in Canyon.
All right. I think we've answered. If you need details, just, you know, if you're like, hey, I've been looking at this trail, should we do this? Yeah, go ahead and just email us again. But that's just our general recommendation. Are we ready to wrap it up?
And I guess other advice for someone from one of the Dakotas is, if you see a green thing with a bunch of spikes coming off of it, don't touch
it. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't fucking touch it.
Because you might not have ever seen one of those.
It's called a cactus, and it's like the plant version of a porcupine.
It is.
It really is.
And generally, you're going to know what they look like and you're going to spot them pretty easily when you're riding. Where you get in trouble is if you get like a flat tire and you have to kneel down. Just watch where you put your fucking knee, because those spikes in the, like the little hairy cactuses, those things will stay in your skin forever.
We got a lot of those really shorty ones. I don't know what you call them, but they're only a couple inches off the ground. And they're just in between. Yeah, they're just in between rocks everywhere, and they hide.
Yeah, and you like go to sit or kneel or put part of your body on the ground, and they will fuck your day up. All right, I'm going to do patrons, and we can wrap it up. So our patrons, starting at $10 per month. Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap. Jim, the fucked up trike guy. Burt Reynolds, Krusty Stash. Zozo, Eric. Burt Reynolds, Mustache. Taperboar Pro. My Pal Dal. MTB Shenanigans. Cam Irish 1. Tennessee Zach. Green Giant. AJ Leland. Kenny Lovestain. Ride Time Extended. JC. Gordon. Josh. Josh. Fart Noises. Tom's P. Ryan. Bill. Aaron. Beaver Pelt Pocket Pool. Ty. Noah. Cool Beans.
Mike Jones.
No.
Oh, sorry. She nasty. Well, normally when you elbow me, it's for that. And I was going to Google something and I forgot what it was.
Anyway. No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank. Goat Roper. Autonomic Dysfunction Makes You Unsympathetic. Chat GPT. At $11.11 per month. Candace Cockfit. At $12 Australian. Dean. Patamillion Disco Ball at $14 Australian and at $20 a month. Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, $26.06 per month. We have S-Works, Because You Aren't Some Kind of Poor, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast, at Fitty.
Yeah, what a coincidence, though. Like, you have the name, you have the last name Cockfit. And then you name, yeah. And then you name your kid Candace. It's crazy.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
All right. Is that it?
Well, no, that's it.
Are we done?
Shut it down.
Done.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your pants.